Boy, Brandon's good at his job.
I love you too, Stru.
I love you, Brandon. I love you, pal. Hey, Brandon's behind the glass. He's the engineer. And I'll tell you what, this is, we weren't even ready anyway, Brandon, because for once in about the last 6 weeks, we're on time.
Just about. I was still a little late, but the clock in here says six, right on time. Still says six.
Hey, welcome to the 4 Hour Outdoorsman. I'll tell you, Struman here, Boomer's here, Mark Lukey, and my gorgeous wife, Diana, sitting in the corner wearing her turquoise blue shirt. We just came back from Easter. And how you doing, Sugar Plum? Yeah, she thumbs up. That's all she's going to say. How you doing, Boom?
I'm doing good. I just want to say happy Easter to everyone out there. I hope you had a blessed day with family and friends. Know what Easter is all about the guy who rose and took care of all of us. So
he has risen.
He has risen.
Indeed.
Yes, he has. So a special day. It's Easter Sunday. And I tell you what, the lakes are open. I went out with the family yesterday, Nicole, my beautiful wife and daughter. We went out to Waconia and did some crappie fishing in her Alumacraft boat, XB200. It's kind of a modified V. Had a good time out there. You know, those crappies are still in transition. The water surface temp was a little cool. It was about 41.2 degrees to be exact on the electronics. And those crappies were still kind of transitioning. We were able to score a couple decent crappies on Waconia, 10, 11.
When you say you said 41.2, hang on, Mark. You said 41.2. What is the perfect temperature for crappies to go crazy?
Well, you know, you really want to catch them in that spawn when they're shallow and they're in the reeds or against the weed lines. So probably, you know, I like to flirt with something in the 50s to mid 50s. So it still needs to warm up a little bit, but there are some spots where they're in a transition pattern. We did find them in about 15 to 17 feet of water. There wasn't a lot of weed line growth, but we were just throwing, I was throwing a little clam pro tackle tungsten jig. I think it was a 16 ounce with a 3-inch white grub. Sophie was throwing a marabou jig, and then so was Nicole, and we were able to score a couple of those, just, you know, tossing them, letting them sink for about 5-6 seconds, and then reeling them nice and slow. That was an absolute hoot. And then I was also excited about Stru and producer Mark. Got signed up for the Minnesota Governor's Opener that's going to be down in Albert Lea,
yeah, buddy.
So excited to be rocking some blackfish gear down there. Check out Omnia Fishing to see what kind of tackle I should be using.
Now, aren't there a couple of lakes you can choose when you go fish in the Governor's Open?
So,
which one did you choose?
Well, it depends on the destination. Like when it was up on Big Sandy or Vermilion, you know, 99% of the people went there. For the Albert Lea, I've never fished down there, but it's a few lakes. It's Albert Lea Lake, Fountains Lake, Pickerel Lake, and Beaver Lake.
Okay, now, you talked about Albert Lea Lake, and it's one of the most popular ones down that way because it's Albert Lea, obviously. What is the depth of...
I want you to guess that, Stru, man. So I went on to the Minnesota DNR Lake Finder. If you're ever trying to figure out, like, you know, stocking surveys or water clarity or what kind of species of fish it has, you can go to omniafishing.com or you go to the Minnesota DNR Fish Finder to find out some good info.
All right, Mark, tell you what.
Take a guess on the depth.
We'll let Mark guess first. How deep... No, he's cheating. He's on his
phone.
No,
I'm not. I'm looking at shout-outs.
What's the deepest part of Albert Lea Lake?
Go ahead, Mark.
I'll say 12 feet.
Why? Why are you making that decision?
My thought is it's not a hilly area of the state. It's kind of flat plains. I'm guessing there isn't a lot of deep, you know, rocky bottom. I'm guessing it's a shallow bowl with a lot of weeds.
I like your philosophy.
I've never been there, by the way.
I haven't either. Here's my thought. You could be right, but I think since Albert Lea is south, right? It's south.
Yep.
Everything from northern Minnesota, since it's way up there, way north, everything's got to go downhill.
Yeah.
So the water must be deeper in southern Minnesota. I'm going to say the deepest part in Lake Albert Lea or Albert Lea Lake is about 38 feet.
Brandon.
Yes, sir.
What's the deepest part of Albert Lea Lake?
42 feet.
Wow, that's deep.
5.5 feet.
What?
No way.
5.5 feet.
How can it be called a lake?
Guess the next question. What is the average depth in Albert Lea Lake?
Well, if the deep, I don't know, 3 feet?
Yeah, 3.5 feet or something.
How come it does not freeze out? I have no idea. Really?
Now, I'm going to be choosing to probably fish Fountains Lake because based on what the Outdoor News wrote about it last year when they announced that it was going to be there, they did a little write-up about it, and they have a fairly healthy walleye population from some older year classes. I think it's like 2012, 2011, 2013, where there's a lot of walleyes in that 15 to 19 inches. So I'm pretty excited. I'm going to go try Fountains Lake, maybe switch it up a little bit because Albert Lee Lake, it said, doesn't have largemouth bass, and I'll be fishing with my wife, and Fountains Lake has largemouth bass, walleye, pike, and all that
also,
good stuff.
Does Albert Lee Lake have walleyes?
Yes.
It has walleyes, and it's 5 feet deep.
5.5 feet deep.
Also, yeah. Fountain Lake, you said it's called Fountain Lake?
Fountains Lake.
Fountains yeah. Lake is probably a better lake for you guys to fish in your situation, because when you get upset with Nicole, if he pushed her out of the boat in Albert Lee, she's only in 3 feet of water.
Yeah, well, she's safe.
So Fountains Lake,
gone. All right, guess what the deepest part of Fountains Lake is.
I haven't got a clue, pal.
Well, it's got naturally reproducing walleyes.
Mm-hmm.
I would think 20 feet.
14 and a half feet deep.
That's wow. Not, there you
yeah,
go.
Yeah. So it'll be kind of interesting. So got all signed up for that. I still got getting ready for the Minnesota Teen Challenge. So if you're interested, we would sure appreciate your support. Producer and Mark and
have
I
you
go
signed
up there.
Yet?
No, I haven't, but I will.
How many weeks in a row have I asked you to sign up?
I know. At least I got the gun.
Four?
Okay. It's going to happen this week. I promise. Or I'm buying wings after the show after on Sunday. Well, for
listen,
you and
listen now.
And I'm buying you guys both drinks if I don't sign up.
I hope you don't sign up.
There you
so go.
So go
to the
yeah,
Four
yeah.
Outdoorsmen Facebook page. It's the number four outdoorsman, facebook.com/the4outdoorsman. And please support Mark and I. We're trying to raise some money. I think we got a goal of, what, $500?
Yeah, I'd like to do at least that. That's kind of the benchmark, and you get raffled in to win cool stuff.
Yeah.
If you make $500.
It's I think, all about Mark.
I think we're about $250, and that's all my family. So
I put in $10, didn't I?
$10. I don't know.
You're
if that
considered
even
family, Stuart.
All right.
Yeah. So we did that. So we did some fishing on Waconia. I think in the next couple of weeks, Waconia is going to start to pick up. I mean, the bite was moderate. So I would just say, if you're going to be going down there and chasing crappies right now, use some tackle or presentations that can cover some water, because they really weren't schooled up tight yet and they weren't very aggressive.
Couple thoughts on Waconia. I have been down there early crappies with our friend Adam Griffith.
Yes.
And he took me there in the peak of it, I believe.
With yep. a blindfold on.
And with a blindfold on, and we killed him with a yeah. slip bobber and whatever. Now you're saying this is probably a little early. When you say they're in transition, meaning they're in the deep bowl and they're moving
yep,
shallow
yep.
at the moment.
They're
not
in the deep bowl
up.
And they're moving into kind of their pre-spawn area. And when Griffith took you, he was right in the prime of the pre-spawn area
yep.
where they were all schooled up.
Right in front of the docks.
Yep, yep. And I think what we'll see here in about maybe, I'd say 4 to 6 weeks, I think they're going to get into that spawn area where I like to go right off the weed lines. And I'll actually position the boat near some of the spots we went, and I'll stay in about 12 feet of water, and I'll cast into about 5 to 7 feet of water, just because the water's so clear, sometimes I can get a little
does
spooky.
Does she have side imaging on her boat yet?
Yes, yes.
So is that what you use to find the roaming crappies, or how does that
You know
work?
What? I prefer to use side imaging more for scanning structure
yeah.
and seeing where the weed lines are, because weed lines, especially windblown weed lines, typically will hold some type of fish. The places I was going to today, I was really just looking at the down imaging mm-hmm. on its own, not the side imaging, because there wasn't a lot of weed growth. And where I could see a couple pockets of crappies, I would stop if there was a little structure change, if there was a little cabbage on the bottom of the lake, and then that's where I would cast and throw that grub
down
there.
Did you use slip bobbers or just cast and retrieve?
Just cast and retrieve, nice and easy. We'd throw that 16th-ounce jig, and it was kind of windy, and we'd throw that 16th-ounce jig, and I'd let it drop for about 5-6 seconds, you know, then close the bail and then start to reel it in nice and slow. So the grub seemed to work good, and I used a 3-inch grub, which is, you know, a pretty aggressive
That's
grub.
Pretty big.
For, yeah,
it is big.
But I wanted to get some attention from some of those bigger crappies, and it seemed to work. I mean, 10-11-inch crappies on Waconia are pretty nice size. I mean, typically
yeah.
you can catch a lot of them when they're in that, you know, frenzy of when Griffith took you, or right in the full-blown spawn, and typically you're using just those small inch and a half tube jigs mm-hmm. you know, with the smallest little jig head you can get away with. But Waconia is going to be a favorite. I'm excited getting ready for Farrell and Allie. They got the Memories Made Guide Service tournament coming up at Lord Fletcher's
on the 27th.
After that is the Ron Shera crappie contest, and then after that, be headed down to Albert Lee, and then we are going to be headed to one of our new sponsors this year. We're headed up to the Whitefish Chain, where we had the Alumacraft boat photo shoot last year, and we're going to stay at Heath's Resort, and I think that's around the 28th through the 30th, and we're going to go chase some of those walleyes.
How deep does the Whitefish Chain get?
It gets deep in some areas. I know that much. But the whitefish chain is very beautiful. There's a lot of islands. There's a lot of different structure. There's a lot of great places to even go bass fishing. So I think we're going to do a combo of hammering some walleyes, and then maybe if we can get away with it, throwing some topwater on some lily pads.
Hey, since we are the Four Outdoorsmen, and you are the big shot of the Four Outdoorsmen, we're here to share information, help people, young people especially, learn how to fish in the metro area. Name three or four lakes in the next couple of weeks where they should go to try to catch some crappies.
Well, the first thing I would say is where the ice is completely out. Safety number one. Because even though we've had warm weather, Strew, there's a lot of ice chunks still floating around, and some of those can kind of submerge and be hidden. So be careful where
like
you're
the
going
Titanic,
first.
You're gonna...
Yeah, just be careful. But I would say Waconia. I would say Tonka. And then I would probably say Prior Lake.
I was surprised we came back from the cabin a couple of just yesterday from in Chautauqua, Wisconsin, driving down Highway 8, and quite a bit of ice still on Deer Lake, and Deer Lake seems to be quite open, you know, as far as the sunshine and all that on Highway 8, but it won't be long. It'll be completely opened up.
Yeah, I heard some of the bays are starting to open up on Mille Lacs yet. I mean, that's still holding ice up there. I know some of the lakes up north are still holding ice. A lot of people are, you know, traveling across the border to South Dakota to some spots there on the river to go chase walleyes. I know our friend Steve Carney was just down there.
Yeah.
I don't know if Traverse has opened up yet. I mean, Traverse, we've experienced that, can be a fabulous spawning bite for walleyes once that lake opens up, and so can Big Stone. So a lot of variety. I see that some of the streams are and bridges are starting to open up in Devil's Lake, so I'm excited to get out there. We're going to get a date set for bringing the Alumacraft to Devil's Lake, North Dakota, but it's going to be a full fishing season, buddy.
You know, Diana and I went to the cabin. She was at the cabin a day before me, probably on Wednesday, I think, and I called her. I said, how's the ice? Am I putting the dock in? Nah, still ice on the lake. I called her Thursday morning. How's the ice? Nah, ain't going to happen. I got up at Thursday afternoon, maybe Thursday evening, and it was completely open. So I got my dock in Friday, so we're all set. We're ready to go.
Oh, man, speaking of it being wide open and ready to go. So when I was pushing in Nicole's boat, we went off one of the public landings there by Lola's Lake House.
I'll tell you the same story,
pal. And I had
my
flip-flops on, and it was cold. I mean, it was cold to the point that I ran back into the truck when I was going to go park it and with the trailer, and I put the heater on high and put it on my feet, and it was 70 degrees out.
Yeah, I was telling,
and I had to warm him up.
I was telling Diana the same thing. We put our dock in, and I did the same thing. I didn't have my hip boots with me or my waders. I can go up to my knees for 5 minutes and put the dock in. I'm telling you, maybe 15 seconds max, and it hurt so bad, I couldn't do it anymore. I thought, how do people survive in this? Oh, I wouldn't want to go that way. Go ahead, Mark. Mark's got a couple shout-outs.
Yeah, I have a couple shout-outs. If you want to get on the Four Outdoorsmen radio show, go to the Four Outdoorsmen Facebook page, the number Four Outdoorsmen, and comment on the shout-out post. And we have a couple here. Our buddy Mike Farrell, who was here last week, said, fun times in Florida. I saw some pictures. Mike,
yeah.
It looks like he's having a good time.
Yeah.
He says, see you all at Saturday at the crappie tournament. Our friend Shannon Cruz says, start working on those boats. Opener is near. Agreed. I still have to get our boat out of the garage. But
red is okay. Black is negative. Got it?
Corey Bechtold says, Thane has a big part in Cole's addiction and dedication to turkey hunting. We're going to have Thane on our next break to talk about his trip. Getting some Merriam turkeys, and Cole got his first turkey this Easter morning before church. I'll share the story on What's Working Now Facebook page. And Paul Graham says, nice crappie, referring to your picture there. So,
hey,
there we go.
Fun. It was fun. And I'm going to say something. I was an idiot on Saturday for not wearing my long sleeve Blackfish UPF shirt. So I had the t-shirt on and I was like, okay, I'm going to soak up some sun first time of the year. Tip to everyone out there. Put some Blackfish gear on or some sunblock if you're going to wear t-shirts, because my arms right now
look like a lobster roll.
Yeah, yeah. That sun is still kicking off some rays right now and getting you tan. So I don't know, Strew, if you've been out golfing or if you're, I don't know,
no, but I was
chomping
working,
at the bit.
No, I'm golfing tomorrow, as a matter of fact, in River Falls with my buddy Bob Krejci, but I have my Blackfish on. Diana has to pull it off my back. When's the last time you threw that in the clothes? I don't care. Hell, it doesn't get dirty. It just. But I had it on for about 3 days at the cabin and doing stuff and yard work and all that. And it's the best stuff out there, man.
Yeah, I'm excited to test the old Blackfish Aspire rain suit out that I got this year. Because one of the fun things about this rain suit with that Event technology is you can throw it in the washer and it just performs even better. And you can't say that for many rain suits out there. So I'm excited to get that thing fish slimed a little bit and get it wet out on the water. That's going to be super exciting. Now, we have a great show tonight, guys, because at 6:20, friend of the show, we call him our local turkey expert, Thane Jensen. He'll be driving home from Iowa from their family Thanksgiving celebration. And he's going to talk to us about him and his dad's trip with an ice team pro out there, Craig Euler. They harvested two Merriams out in the Black Hills of South Dakota. And then at 6:40.
Yeah, my boss, Ron Scherer, is going to be on. He's going to talk about turkey hunting. Turkey hunting is Ron's biggest passion. A lot of people don't know that about him. And he's also going to talk about MNFISH. You've probably heard about it, the new organization to lobby for fishermen's rights and kind of be a voice in government for more land and things and access, and not land for fishing, but access to lakes. So Ron is going to be on at 6:40, and maybe we can talk a little bit about the crappie contest and yeah, shoot the bull at the man, Ron Chera.
Yeah, it's gonna be a fun show. And you know what? The temperatures are supposed to be getting warm out. And on Wednesday, if you're checking your weather channel or your app on your phone, it's supposed to flirt with like 68 degrees. So there's a chance Nicole and I are gonna grab the Alumacraft and maybe go out to Tonka and do a little scouting for some of those crappies.
I thought
ready.
Nicole had a job.
She does, but she works till 5, and so I'll get off probably around 4, and I'll grab the boat, and I'll meet her at the landing, and the sun doesn't go down until 7 or 8 o'clock, buddy, so there's still 2 hours of fishing to do. So, and there's a lot of great fishing in the metro, as you guys know.
Yeah, I think I want to go to Bald Eagle Lake, try that out soon. Sri, you want to come?
I'll be there, pal. Can we go on the 4-outdoorsman boat? What's it called? The Sea Sprite we have?
The Sea Sprite? Yeah, we'll go in. I want to try early spring crappies on Bald Eagle. Let's see what that does.
Let's go.
Hey, I'm excited. I want to give a shout out to Strewman.
Okay.
Because Strewman has secured, in an undisclosed location, some amazing turkey hunting land that's less than an hour from the Twin Cities.
If Mark does not get a turkey this year, Mark's got to sell his shotgun.
Yes. I'm going to get a turkey.
So I'll take care of you boys.
So
all
we appreciate
right?
that, Strewman.
Will you teach me how to put them to bed, if you will?
Yeah, yeah. We're going to do that. We're going to put them to bed. You know, Thane's going to talk about it. We're going to see where they're roosting. We're going to set up probably about 100 yards away from that. We'll probably get a clam pop-up blind, the old hunting blinds they used to sell. And you, I, and Strewman are going to sit in there and
laugh a lot. Hey, we'll be right back with Thane Jensen, the turkey master, after these breaks in 4-outdoorsman. Keep on listening, gang. Talk to you in a few seconds.
Missed part of Bob Outdoors? No problem. Just click on the weekend tab at mybobcountry.com to listen back to the 4-outdoorsman anytime.
If you love walleye fishing, then you'll love Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. Plus, you can keep 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit. What does that mean? You can bring home 10 walleyes to the freezer, baby, and there is no slot limit. Devil's Lake just doesn't have world-class walleye fishing. It's got awesome jumbo perch, northern pike, and white bass. For lodging and guide options, up-to-date fishing reports, visit devilslakend.com.
Let's start thinking about open water, flip-flops, and sunshine. Boomer here, and my family and I have been fishing with Alumacraft boats for the past 6 years. Alumacraft boats cover the complete spectrum of fishability, whether we're catching walleyes, hooking panfish, or chasing bass. A best-in-class dry ride with Alumacraft's 2XB haul and lots of storage are just a couple of the reasons why we choose Alumacraft. To learn more about Alumacraft, go to alumacraft.com or visit a dealer near you. Finally, an online tackle shop built for you. OmniaFishing.com. Boomer here, and how about this? Headed to a new lake or an old favorite? With OmniaFishing.com, you simply pick your lake, the species of fish you want to catch, and OmniaFishing.com tells you the hottest lures that are working now. And it's not just Omnia Fishing's opinion, it's the local guides and pros that help with selecting the tackle for each lake. With thousands of lakes to select in Minnesota, OmniaFishing.com has you covered.
Come to Delano Lanes and Entertainment on Highway 12, just 20 minutes west of 494. Bowling with great daily specials. Start the week on a high note. How about the Monday Mystery Beer Special? $1.75 a beer of our choice from 5 to 10. Or close it out with open bowling all day Friday. Saturday nights come for a 3-course dinner special starting at 6 p.m. And contact us for special family bowling and birthday packages. Get the daily specials and live music schedule at DelanoLanes.com.
Spring is right around the corner, and you just remembered your trailer needs to be serviced before the season starts. Crystal Welding has you covered. Crystal Welding in Maple Grove offers a wide variety of services, including welding, maintenance, and repairs for all types of trailers. Crystal Welding is your one-stop shop for all your trailer needs. Go to crystalwelding.com for more information. Crystal Welding. Solutions. Service. Results.
Crystal Welding gets the job done. No time to small, because we do it all.
You can't choose the weather, but you can choose rain gear that works. Introducing Blackfish Technical Rainwear. Utilizing patented fabric technology, Blackfish rain suits are 100% waterproof, yet provide unmatched breathability, keeping you dry from your own perspiration. And with a limited lifetime warranty, Blackfish rain suits are built to last. When you need to stay dry and comfortable, choose Blackfish, because you can't choose the weather. Learn more at blackfishgear.com.
This is a cow whose milk became everyone's favorite cheese at the craft fair, but cheese only lasts so long. The impression a small business makes needs to last much longer. That's why Vistaprint is offering 500 truly personalized business cards starting at $9.99. Choose from hundreds of fresh designs tailored to your type of company, or upload your own. The choice is yours. The time is now. Get 500 business cards starting at $9.99 with promo code 6000. That's promo code 6000 at checkout on Vistaprint.com. Vistaprint, own the now.
I can't believe it.
That Philip brought his little brother on our mission into orbit.
How long until we get there? How long until we get there? How long until we get there?
No, I can't believe how easy it was to save hundreds of dollars on my car insurance with Geico.
What's this button do? What's this button do? What's this button do? What's this button do?
No, don't touch that!
Believe it, Geico could save you 15% or more on car insurance.
Hi, this is Matt with TM Manufacturing, along with my two sons, Travis and Thomas. I want to help you split wood faster from the comfort of your skid loader. I would say the main reason why people buy the TM skid splitters is because they're looking to remove the labor. With a traditional wood splitter, the more you split, the farther away the wood gets. You have to handle it several times to get it in your pile, where here it's all basically done in the same motion. The TM skid splitter is a wood splitter that mounts to the skid loader. It mounts upside down and it's controlled from inside the skid steer cab. You bring the log splitter over the log, pick the log up, you can transport the log, you can actually split the log on a pile. So you're actually doing three things at once. Basically, you don't have to touch the log in some cases until you put it in your stove. I can prove to you that the TM skid splitters are the strongest, fastest skid splitters on the market. Watch the video at skidsplitter.com. That's skidsplitter.com.
Thank you, Brandon, for bringing us back in. Strewman here, Boomer, Mark, Luke, and my wife, Diana, sitting in the corner. I don't know what she's doing over there, but she's not being part of the show, but she's looking good. You're looking good, baby.
Glad to see her back.
Yeah,
she's
haven't seen her
all the time.
Well, ever since, picture this out, ever since Brian Zepp left the show,
yeah, magically.
Diana has not been back. What's that tell us? Hey, I'm guessing we got a new guest. We got a new friend here. You know this guy better than I do. Bring him back in.
He's a turkey lurking feller from the state of Iowa, but now lives up here and works for the great company Clam Outdoors. Mr. Thane Jensen, how are you doing, my friend?
Hey, guys, I'm doing well. Thanks for having me.
Oh, Thane, it's always a pleasure to have you on, buddy. So are you traveling back home from the farm in Iowa?
I am. I've got the family in the truck, and we are headed north from the great state of Iowa.
Ah, so recently, Thane, you just completed one of your annual trips with your pops, Mike, or like who we call Gummer, to go visit Craig Euler chasing turkeys down in the Black Hills of South Dakota.
Hang on a second. You just can't call some guy Gummer and not tell us why he's called Gummer.
I don't know why his nickname's Gummer.
Well, then ask the kid.
All right, Thane, why do we call him Gummer?
So back when I lived in Iowa, we hunted with a bunch of my mom's family and some of my high school friends, and Dad was the oldest of the group, and they were just giving him a hard time about his age. So he's now Gummer.
That means he got no teeth. I know. Okay, that's good enough for me. Go ahead.
He's got his own. He has his own teeth. He has the nickname, I guess.
I love it. So Thane, talk to us about your adventure. What you guys did in South Dakota?
Well, you know, first and foremost, I got to give big shout out to the folks that we go with out there. Some very good friends of ours, the Oilers. They have my dad and I out each year, and last couple of years the weather's given us a little bit of a run for our money. We had to leave a day early last year just to beat that snowstorm, if you remember, in April.
Yeah.
And then this year we basically had to wait for them to open I-90 so we could get out there the day before opener. So weather-wise, it's been a challenge the last couple of years, but we managed.
Hey, Thiener, it's Mark here. Is it hard to get a tag out there in the Black Hills, or what's the process like for that?
No, actually, the Black Hills is very easy to get a non-resident tag. It is a separate area, so you do have to apply, but you're guaranteed a tag. So there's an application process, but it's not like you have to be concerned that you're not going to draw a tag.
Cool.
$100.
So, Thane, talk to us about, you know, when we've been turkey hunting together, you know, we try to find, put them to bed. We camp out near the roost. We get up at 4 a.m., you know, get out there, start calling, try to bring that big Tom in. It's a little different on how you guys chase them in the Black Hills, isn't it?
It is. I mean, certainly that method still works out there. You know, the bad news is oftentimes these birds are in such large areas and they're in such large family groups or flocks that, you know, you've experienced it, Boomer, where they come out of the tree, they may not do what we want them to do, but we've always got to play on them.
Yep.
You know, you get 30, 40 birds coming out of the trees at fly down. If they go the other way, out in the Black Hills, oftentimes there's just a lot of open ground, and you're kind of hosed right out of the chute. So we've kind of taken the lazy man's way of doing that, I guess you would say, is we show up to the ranch about 10:30, and by that time they've kind of done their normal morning stuff, and they've settled down, and the toms are lonely, and we just do a bunch of ridge running until we strike a bird.
So, Thane, you know, you talk about the toms getting lonely. Do toms? We've had this chat. So let's say they mate up in the morning. At what time do they leave that hen and go after another hen in the afternoon?
Well, I mean, there's a lot depending upon that. I mean, how many hens that particular bird has with them is a big factor. Their receptiveness, the weather, if it's crazy hot or cold or raining, that'll kind of mess things up a little bit. The other thing, too, is you know, the time of the season. Farther along in the breeding season, those hens are sitting on nests. And not as willing to interact with the toms in the morning. Their focus is on sitting on that nest and protecting those eggs. So you can find a very receptive bird later in the seasons when those hens are sitting on nests any time of the day.
Hey, Thane, so if you go into the field later in the day, do you just set up a pop-up then, or how do you do that without getting busted?
Generally speaking, you know, out there anyway in the Black Hills of South Dakota, we'll just climb up on a ridge and just start walking. Walk about 50 yards, stop, call for a bit. If we don't get an answer, walk another 50 yards, stop and call. You're up high enough generally out there that, and you're far enough away from the birds that if you get one to answer, you've got a little bit of time to set up. But I'll also tell you, you don't want to mess around a whole lot if you get a bird that responds, because generally speaking, hunting like that, when they respond, they're on their way in a fairly short order.
You know, Thane, when we think about the different species of turkeys, and they all have different personalities, here in the land of 10,000 lakes, primarily Easterns, right? And we have some hybrids that we've hunted out west in point of Minnesota a little bit. What's the personality of a Merriam? I mean, how do you hunt them a little different than you hunt an Eastern turkey?
Well, you know, they're not afraid to gobble. That's probably what I like the most about hunting them, is they gobble their full head off at anything and anyone, and they just come screaming. And like I said earlier, you know, if you get one to respond, you best get ready, because they will show up in no time. I mean, they'll surprise you. They'll come in silent like an Eastern, but generally speaking, they're going to let you know they're coming and where they're coming from, and you get to hear a lot of gobbling if you like that type of thing.
Now, Thane, I know you and your dad successfully harvested one, both Merriam turkeys. They were both beautiful, had great coloring on them. What? Walk us through one of more of the exciting adventures on one of the birds that you shot.
You know, well, I missed one, the first one we called in. So that, I don't know how exciting that was. It was actually quite exciting, but I missed the first one we called in. And to show you how quick things can change, I was standing over my bird an hour later. So we missed the one, we regrouped, we walked another 100 yards, struck another bird, sat down, and I was able to get him. But, you know, one of the more interesting things, you know, is turkey fighting. You know, you get a turkey, they come in, and you shoot that first bird, oftentimes is the dominant bird, and then they just go to getting beat up by their buddies or counterparts or we'll call them upstart. Not necessarily Jake's either. I mean, I've seen Tom's whoop up another Tom after he's been kicked down, but I've also seen Jake's do the same thing. You know, you guys heard the story. You guys know the story.
Yeah, Thane, you know, you often have a famous quote that if turkeys had a sense of smell, they'd be almost impossible to harvest. What is it about it if they're so smart that they're so dumb that you shoot one and then the other ones start jumping on it?
You know what? I mean, I personally believe they're just in love. I mean, they cannot see beyond the love and the lust in their heart that they you know, and it's also a dominance thing. You know, you shoot that dominant bird, you know, the next guy up is like, hey, I got a chance now, you know? That's really it. I mean, like you said, Boomer, I don't know how famous my quote is, but I do say it often, and I do fully believe that if the white-tailed deer and the wild turkey were to team up, you'd never kill either one of them because of the hearing and the eyesight of the turkey and the smell and keen eyesight and ears of a white-tail.
That's a good line, pal. Hey, Strewman here. You know, you shot an Eastern and a Merriam. Have you shot a Rio Grande and an Osceola? If so, what is the difference in the hunting tactics?
So I've shot a Rio down in Kansas. That is the famous Carl Lewis turkey that took me out and will probably cause me to have surgery someday. But I would.
That's a great story, by the way.
The main difference, I've not hunted the Osceola out of Florida. I would like to do that. My good buddy Matt Brewer got one earlier in the season, and I may need to bend his ear on how to pull that off and get me a little slam under my belt. But you know what? The Rios I found that we hunted in northern Kansas seemed to act an awful lot like Easterns. The only real difference was the size of the flocks. Once again, larger flocks of birds. And I don't know if that's a trait or if that's just what we had to work with.
Well, Thane, I know you're driving back from Iowa. Hopefully you're not on Bluetooth. Did you tell your wife yet about that trip you've already booked to Florida and paid for?
Well, I am on Bluetooth, and you just busted me, buddy.
Hey, you know, Thane, real quick question for you before we let you go. We often talk about different decoy patterns. You know, I'm kind of a lonely hen guy. Talk about what kind of decoy patterns you like and if you vary it up depending on the time of year.
So, you know, I in the Black Hills, I think I don't know that we've ever used a decoy out there. Those birds are just so nomadic and willing to come in. We've not needed it. When I hunted in Iowa, when you and I have hunted together in Minnesota, you're right. Yep, you and I, some of our best arguments have been over one hen, Jake and a hen. No matter what, I'm putting a Jake out, and you won't change my mind. Boomer. It doesn't, anyway,
let me tell you a story about that. It doesn't matter if you just put out the lonely hen, and when Thane's not looking, you take his Jake decoy and put it back. He's going to go put that Jake decoy back, so he's pretty adamant about it.
Well, I mean, it affords you so much, you know, we'll call it leeway or wiggle room when a bird does come in, because when a bird comes in, the last thing that Tom wants is somebody else, a Jake nonetheless, you know, courting his lady. So his attention is going all to that Jake decoy. He wants to fight it. He wants to jump up on top of it and act like he's dominant over it. And he'll strut around it and he'll spin around. And, you know, while he's doing that, he's not paying any attention to what you're doing. You might be folding up your lawn chair in the blind, you know, making all kinds of racket noise, moving, you know, reloading your gun, whatever. You know, it allows you a lot of opportunity to make mistakes and recover.
Hey, thanks, Drew, man. Here, I'll tell you what. You're coming back with a couple of Miriams, I think, you and the old man.
Oh, yeah.
How's Jen going to cook them up?
Oh.
Come on.
Well, I can tell you this much. My beautiful wife, she probably won't be the one doing the cooking of the birds. She has her forte in the kitchen, and but wild game is kind of where I jump in. And generally, the grill's going to get fired up. We're gonna grill those things out. Generally, I'll strip the breasts out, just
Traeger
strips, cube them up, and Traeger that thing right up. Exactly, Boomer.
Perfect.
Traegerize them.
Well, Thaner, thanks for calling in. Thanks for recapping your Black Hills, South Dakota hunt. We always appreciate it. We'll talk to you soon, my friend, and say hi to the family from us.
Absolutely. Thanks, guys. You have a great, great one tonight. Good show, and happy Easter to y'all.
Hey,
hey, Thane, listen to the second half. Ron Scherer is going to be on, so it'll help you get back home, all right?
I love it. I love it.
Take care, buddy.
All right. What a great guy. Yeah. He's always a great storyteller, too, and he knows his turkey hunt stuff. I mean, we joke about the decoy spread, but I always tip my hat to Thane because he sure knows
it. Why don't we listen to him once in a
while? Well, we do. We have him on every year. Hey, thinking of people we should tip our hat to, let's talk about sponsors, Shrew, because we don't get to yap about hunting and fishing without great partners.
You mean like Heath's Resort up in the Whitefish chain?
Yeah.
Boy, I tell you what, we got to get up. We're going to get up there in May, right? A couple of weeks we're getting up there. Great facilities, great cabins, great beach, great fishing. The Whitefish chain. Heath's has been in the same family for many, many years. Heath's Resort, give it a chance.
Yeah, and then let's talk about Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open all year round. The ice is starting to melt. The streams are starting to go. The bridges are gone. Can't wait for our trip up there to get 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit and bring the Alumacraft boats up there. We've been fishing with Alumacraft now for the last 6-8 years. Can't wait to get the Competitor 205 on some big water and Nicole's XB200, plenty of storage and a dry ride.
Hey, we got to get Susie on from Devil's Lake there, or her new second-in-command, because Tanner has made a change, and now she's got a new second-in-command, so let's get him on next week or the week after, huh?
Perfect.
All right, let's talk about Blackfish gear. I'll tell you what, performance wear, soft shell, outerwear that I wear all the time, the one that Dinah's always telling me to throw in the wash, and it's so comfortable, I don't want to do that. And the best rain gear in the industry, so anything from Blackfish is the best you're going to get.
And Omnia Fishing, it's like your local bait store online, omniafishing.com. You pick the lake you're going to go after, the species of fish you want to target, the technique you're going to use, and it's going to offer up some good tackle on what you should probably be using, because it gets its feedback from experts like pros and guides that live on the water, and they have a premium membership available that's really affordable, gives us some great deals on shipping, plus some insights and deals that you won't get anywhere
else. Well, I'll tell
you
what, if you keep bragging about Omnia, how about if we get one of these guys in from Omnia as guests in studio to
Talk about that's a good segue, Stu, because I talked to Parker at Omnia Fishing this weekend, or on Friday, and I think next week in studio we're going to have the great folks from Omnia Fishing in.
Sweet.
Sounds good.
All right, Marky. Who we got coming up next?
Mr. Ron Scherer is going to join us after the break, so stay tuned.
You're listening to the 4 Outdoorsmen, part of Bob Outdoors.
Let's start thinking about open water, flip-flops, and sunshine. Boomer here, and my family and I have been fishing with Alumacraft boats for the past 6 years. Alumacraft boats cover the complete spectrum of fishability, whether we're catching walleyes, hooking panfish, or chasing bass. A best-in-class dry ride with Alumacraft's 2XB haul and lots of storage are just a couple of the reasons why we choose Alumacraft. To learn more about Alumacraft, go to alumacraft.com or visit a dealer near you.
If you love walleye fishing, then you'll love Devil's Lake, North Dakota, where walleye season is open 365 days a year. Plus, you can keep 5 walleyes a day with a 2-day possession limit. What does that mean? You can bring home 10 walleyes to the freezer, baby, and there's no slot limit. Devil's Lake just doesn't have world-class walleye fishing. It's got awesome jumbo perch, northern pike, and white bass. For lodging and guide options, up-to-date fishing reports, visit devilslakend.com.
Finally, an online tackle shop built for you. OmniaFishing.com. Boomer here, and how about this? Headed to a new lake or an old favorite? With OmniaFishing.com, you simply pick your lake, the species of fish you want to catch, and OmniaFishing.com tells you the hottest lures that are working now. And it's not just Omnia Fishing's opinion, it's the local guides and pros that help with selecting the tackle for each lake. With thousands of lakes to select in Minnesota, OmniaFishing.com has you covered.
Come to Delano Lanes and Entertainment on Highway 12, just 20 minutes west of 494. Bowling with great daily specials. Start the week on a high note. How about the Monday Mystery Beer Special? $1.75 a beer of our choice from 5 to 10. Or close it out with open bowling all day Friday. Saturday nights, come for a three-course dinner special starting at 6 p.m. And contact us for special family bowling and birthday packages. Get the daily specials and live music schedule at DelanoLanes.com.
You can't choose the weather, but you can choose rain gear that works. Introducing Blackfish Technical Rainwear. Utilizing patented fabric technology, Blackfish rain suits are 100% waterproof, yet provide unmatched breathability, keeping you dry from your own perspiration. And with a limited lifetime warranty, Blackfish rain suits are built to last. When you need to stay dry and comfortable, choose Blackfish, because you can't choose the weather. Learn more at blackfishgear.com.
Calling Minnesota youth between the ages of 8 and 17, you could win a chance to join the 2019 Governor's Fishing Opener festivities in the Elbert Lee Lakes area. Visit outdoornews.com/kidsopenercontest for details. It's easy to enter. Just tell us in 50 words or less why you want to fish the 2019 opener. Two winners will be selected and you get to bring an adult with you to fish the opener too. Contest winners will enjoy two nights lodging, fishing the opener, and the chance to experience the official festivities of the 2019 Minnesota Governor's Fishing Opener thanks to sponsors including the Elbert Lee CVB, Explore Minnesota, Bob FM, and Outdoor News. The Kids Opener Contest ends April 27th, so enter online at outdoornews.com/kidsopenercontest. Then stay tuned to Outdoor News Radio for our live broadcast during the Governor's Fishing Opener event on May 11th. We'll see you at the opener.
Spotify Premium lets you listen to what you want, when you want. And now comes with Hulu on us, so you can get more of what you love. That's all your favorite songs and playlists, even when you're not online, along with the podcasts you love. Plus, the hottest movies and shows, like The Handmaid's Tale, Pen 15, and Fire Fraud. Listen more, watch more, feel more. Spotify Premium, now with Hulu on us. Includes access to Hulu's ad-supported plan. Limited quantity of offers while supplies last. Other terms apply.
When you got a big family and you're short on food, who you gonna use? Walmart's grocery pickup. When you have a dinner party and your pantry is empty, who you gonna use? Walmart's grocery pickup.
Try Walmart's free grocery pickup. Order online and we'll bring them to your car for free. Download our grocery app today.
Who you gonna use? Walmart.
$30 minimum. Restrictions apply.
Total Country Bob FM.
Hey, welcome back to the Four Outdoorsmen. Stu Man, Lukey, Boomer, my wife Diane is in studio. And the big shot, the man that we need all the time, Brandon's behind the glass. Brandon, who do you have on the phone, my friend?
Oh, I got the one, the only, Ron Scheras on the line.
I've never heard of the guy.
Ron, you on the line with us, buddy?
You've never heard of a legend in his own mind?
I love it.
I've never heard of the guy.
Ron's bigger than you, Stru.
Well, you'd be sorry you did.
Hey, Ron, the only reason I came in the studio is I thought we were going to be talking to Charles Carolts, but you're just as good. Welcome to the Four Outdoorsmen.
Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah. How's your Easter going? Happy Easter.
Well, yes, it's almost over. With great weather, you can't beat it. And yes, it was a happy Easter.
Good for you.
Hey, Ron, it's your favorite sales guy here, Mark Lukey. Thanks for joining us.
Mark who?
Never heard of him.
Yeah. Chuck Knobloch.
So the reason I got you on, there's two main reasons. First, I want to talk about MinFish, your new organization that we've been hearing about. Maybe you can give kind of a pitch for that. And I also want to talk a little turkey with you, because a lot of people don't know that turkey is one of your favorite things to do, and we'd love to hear some turkey talk. Does that sound good?
Yeah, no problem. I love to talk turkeys or talk about min fish as well. So where do you want to start?
Well, let's start with min fish and get some business out of the way, and then we'll close with turkey. So you've been coming around the office talking about it quite a bit. Why don't you tell our listeners that haven't heard a little bit about min fish and how to get involved, and what's the point of this organization? I know that there's some huge names involved, yours included, and why don't you give us the elevator speech on min fish?
Well, about 6 months ago or so, a bunch of us got together who were addicted to fishing. Myself, Steve Panaz, John Peterson, who started Northland Tackle. I'm going to forget some names, but on and on, Al Lindner, Babe Winkleman, and several others. Our concern initially was, is the Minnesota Fishing Museum and the Hall of Fame going to survive or not? Because we thought fishing is way too important to this state to have those two things go away. So, but while we were meeting, it really also dawned on us that the angler today, the average angler in Minnesota, we really have no representation in the legislature. There are some groups, you know, Muskie Inc. is over there. The spearing groups are over there. There's a Habitat for Fish Habitat group. But no overall group. And so we started to look at that, and the more we looked at it, the more we saw evidence that an organization was badly needed that would start representing anglers in the legislature. And then, of course, there's always issues with the DNR fisheries. Sometimes there's things they want to do and you want them to do, but they can't get it done because of the legislature. And then other times there are things they do that some anglers might disagree with, but the idea was to open up some communication there. And so that's our goal. And what we're trying to do at the moment, I tell you what, we just started going public with this at the sports show in March. We have thousands of members already. And we're gathering emails and phones and starting a data bank that when issues come up, and future legislators, if you join us, MinFish, you'll get an email that says, hey, get a hold of your legislator because tell them to vote for this or tell them to vote against this or whatever, and because that's who they listen to. So that's it in a nutshell.
Ron, it's Boomer here. Thanks for joining us tonight. When you have that type of horsepower of names and coming up with this, Ron, is there like a formal process you have to go through to start a lobbying group to support the ideology of what MinFish is doing? Do you have to fill out paperwork to the state, or what does that look like?
Well, no, you don't have to fill out paperwork. I mean, we're citizens. We can the government is open to us. So, but what we're doing is we've got, like I said, with our board of directors and all the members, Gary Leaf is also kind of our legislative liaison guy. He's very smart about the legislature and how they operate. He's the guy that really got our legacy amendment through 10, 12 years ago. So when the time is right, we will testify for or against bills, or we will try to get some legislators to put bills in that we could support. So one right now that we're behind, but we haven't got any publicity for yet, is we're behind the legislation that would give DNR some money to issue grants to schools for fishing teams.
Oh, that'd be great.
That's awesome.
So that's another part of our platform. But let me tell you one thing that most fishermen do not know. We buy fishing licenses, and that money goes to DNR for fisheries. When we buy fishing tackles, there's a federal excise tax on tackle. That's the Dingell-Johnson tax. That goes to DNR by law for fishing programs. But your tax money, the money you sent in April 15th, almost $0 of that goes to fish management programs. And you go, whoa, wait a minute, fishing, there's 1.5 million anglers in the state. We generate a multi-billion-dollar economy, yet we get no money from tax money to further fishing in this state. You say, why would that be? Well, the reason is there's been no squeaky wheel over there. And we tend to be that squeaky wheel.
Yeah, boy.
That's good.
Boy.
Well, that's awesome. You successfully lobbied to get the black lab to be the state dog a couple months ago.
He did.
So we all know that you can be a squeaky wheel when you need to be, right?
Well, that wasn't even my dumb idea, but no, I thought it was a great idea, and I went along with it. But the House, I don't know. There's so much politics over there. Sometimes it makes you, makes you ill.
Yeah.
For one reason or another, that bill got introduced in the Senate, never got introduced in the House, so it just died there.
Oh, no.
Well, this is just the games they play. They're sick games, really. I mean, a state dog, you got to turn that into politics? Really?
Good point.
Really? Anyway.
Go ahead, Boomer. Crazy.
Yeah, Ron, so a lot of us know here, but I don't think everyone knows all about your passion for turkey hunting. Let's start with that now. Like, where did you get this extreme passion for turkey hunting?
All right. Well, before I do that, let me just put this in here that folks interested in joining in fish can go on our website, mn-fish.com. Okay?
Awesome.
All right. And before we get to the first, since you're talking about fishing still, and we'll go to turkey hunting right away, I got an inside track that I know you had a big musical background. You were a professional singer for quite some time. Love music. It's been a big part of your life and you probably still enjoy music. But I heard through the grapevine today that no matter who you're fishing with, you will not allow a radio or any music in the boat.
That's true. I have to concentrate. I can't chew gum and walk either at the same time. So I just don't like it.
That's a wonderful story. I'm not even going to tell you who shared that with me. But let me ask you this. If the Twins are in the World Series, they're playing really well right now. They get in the World Series in September of 2019. You're fishing. Are you going to listen to a World Series ball game?
No, I won't.
That a boy. All right, Boomer, we'll talk about turkey. Let's go.
Yeah, Ron, let's hear about your passion and your start for turkey hunting.
Well, it all began. A lot of folks don't know this. My first job out of college was editor of the South Dakota Conservation Digest. And so that job took me all around the state, including meeting the South Dakota turkey and deer biologist at that time. Art Richardson was his name. He lived in Custer, South Dakota in the Black Hills. So because turkeys, there were no turkeys in my home state of Iowa when I was growing up there. And so this was a whole new critter to me. So he invited me to tag along with him one time to turkey hunt. And so he put me up on a saddle on a hill, and he went the other side. And I heard him calling over there, but I didn't. I just was sitting there by a tree. And suddenly I looked, and here come some turkeys just walking by me. They were not paying much attention to him, but they walked by me, and the last one through was a Jake, a Tom. I didn't even know what a Jake was then, but he had a beard, and I knew I had to have a trigger with a beard, and I pulled the trigger, and I got him. So that started it. Well, then Art gave me a mouth call, and now you mentioned my music. I put that mouth call, the diaphragm call they call, I put it in my mouth, and I could play it. And so I could sound like a turkey almost instantly. So that added my interest, and then it went from there. Then when I left the South Dakota and came to the Star Tribune, I started going to the Black Hills every spring. I'd write about it, and then a friend of mine, he's now is a friend, but he was reading my stories in Rapid City. He says, "Come on out! I got thousands of acres. You can hunt with me." And so I did. And that's when we started the Turkey Track Club, which is still going on, by the way, 45 years.
Wow.
They've been going on. And so far, our first two camps are 100%. And we guide people, house them, feed them. It's the oldest turkey camp in America. And so I've been chasing turkeys for 50 years. So there you go.
Good for you, buddy.
I killed my first turkey in 1967. I got to tell young people, there was a 1967.
Go ahead, Mark.
Hey, Ron, I don't know if I heard this through someone, but were you somehow involved in getting turkeys repopulated back up here? Or did you cover that story or something? I can't remember where I heard that.
Well, I was involved because I got the addiction to turkeys, and I was living in Minneapolis, so I some of my friends, I start telling them about this. So I said, well, come on out. I'll show you what this is all about. So we did. Bob Nybo was one of the first to come up. He used to have Nybo's Cafe and Red Wing, whatever. Anyway, to make a long story short, I called a meeting of a bunch of folks that I knew who had either been out in the Black Hills with me, whatever. We formed the very first National Wild Turkey Federation chapter in the state of Minnesota.
Cool.
And we held the first banquets. And then I went and talked to the DNR one time. I said, hey, you got to do more. You got to do more to get turkeys going here in Minnesota. And the Roger Holmes of the wildlife chief, he says, if you want turkeys, you're going to have to pay for them yourself because I don't have any money in my budget. I said, pay what? He said, well, you know, you can pay for the trapping and transplanting, whatever. So we did. We held banquets, and we paid thousands of dollars we paid the salary of the two or three DNR trappers who were, I tell you, hard work. They sat in blinds for hours and hours in the wintertime and trapped turkeys down at southeast Minnesota and moved them around the state. That's how they got spread so fast, and, of course, that's history now. My gosh, wow. Turkeys all over.
Well, you did a great job because they are everywhere now.
Hey, Ron Struman here. Yeah, thanks for being on the 4-Outdoorsman. Of course, we're listening. We're talking with Ron Shira. The DNR is proposing potentially a couple of changes in 2020. Let me know what your thoughts are about possibly eliminating some of the required lottery entrance for firearm hunters in the first two seasons, spring seasons, possibly extending the fall turkey season into November, maybe two turkeys in the metro area, and even possibly using 410 shotguns for turkey hunting. Any thoughts about any of those potential changes?
Well, I don't mind making the licenses more open now. I think we can do that. Go get one and hunt whenever you want to. I don't like the two turkey idea in the metro. You know, when you start adding, making two or three, the less respect you have for a critter. And I don't like the extended fall. Fall turkey hunting is boring, okay? and you can shoot hens. So, you know, why do that? We don't shoot hen pheasants, so why should we shoot hen turkeys? That's kind of my thinking.
Good question.
The 410, you know, they've come up with here's the problem. Well, it's a problem with any shotgun, but most turkey hunters fail. I know this from my years of running my turkey camp. Most turkey hunters fail to pattern their shotgun at 30, 40 yards. There's hardly a shotgun made that aims or hits where it's aiming.
Yeah.
You got to know that. So now you got to pattern it. If you don't pattern it, I don't care if you're using a 10 gauge or a 410, you're going to cripple a turkey.
Yeah.
So that's the lesson there.
Ron, we're going to let you go. I'll tell you what. Ron Shearer, thanks for being on the 4-Outdoorsman. Have a happy Easter. Thanks for giving us 10, 15, 20 minutes of your time. You keep supporting us. We'll support you. We followed you for many, many years. I'm 68 years old almost, and I've followed you a lot, and we're going to keep on following you. Thanks for being on the 4-Outdoorsman.
Well, thank you. I've told you everything I know of right now anyway.
Thanks, Ron.
Have a great night. Take care of Mark Lukey, will you, pal?
I'll try.
All right, take care of yourself, sir.
I tell you what,
I grew up
idolizing Ron Shearer.
Yeah.
I mean, just anything to do with the outdoors, it was always watching Ron.
Well, I tell you, we had a hell of a show. We had Thane Jensen talking about turkey, Ron Shearer, the legend, of course, Ron Shearer Production, Minnesota Bound, all that kind of good stuff. Thanks for listening on Easter Sunday. Hope you had a great day. In the meantime, Boomer's got something to say.
Yeah, have a blessed Easter. Stay tuned. Bear Facts and Fishtails is following us up on the Bob Outdoors block. And don't forget to get outdoor.
Bob Outdoors continues with Hall of Fame fisherman Mark Fisher and Larry Bowling on Bear Facts and Fishtails next.